going into this year's Canes-Bruins playoff series, I pointed out it was going to be decided by whoever's top line performed best. In other words, whose stars came to blame? Last year when the Bruins swept the Canes, the top Bruins line of Pasternak, Bergeron, and Marchand combined for 13 points, while Carolina's top line, Aho, Teuvo, Teravainen, and Andrei Svechnikov, had just 4 points. It wasn't a good enough effort on their part, and we saw how it played out on the ice. In Game 1, Boston, their top line, it was back in a way that they weren't in the round-robin series. Marchand scored, Bergeron scored. The Canes didn't get much from their top trio. It was a complete change in Game 2. Teuvo Teravainen had a goal. Dougie Hamilton had a goal that turned out to be the game winner. And yes, Robert, our guy,
Mr. Svechnikov!
It should be noted that David Pastrnak didn't play, while Justin Williams and Sami Vatanen both returned to the lineup. Goaltending, it's been, I think, about as even as you can really expect it to be. I'd probably lean it in Carolina's favor because they have two guys they can trust. There was very little drop-off between Peter Mrazek in Game 1 and James Reimer, just like we saw in the Rangers series. Tuukka Rask, he's been good too, but can you really expect him, with the way the schedule looks, to continue that? Will he be fatigued at noon tomorrow? You have a double overtime game after things got postponed on Tuesday night. You quickly turn around, you play Thursday night, and then you're set. Not having a full 2 days rest, you're playing Saturday at noon. Another quick turnaround. Granted, you don't have to worry about travel, so I'm sure that helps. But I think you're going to have a well-rested Peter Mrazek and Tuukka Rask, who I'm a little concerned about the fatigue levels at this point. I still like Boston to win the series. I said it up front. I did not like this matchup for the Canes. I wanted Carolina to play Washington. They probably should have played Washington if all things were fair. The format, it didn't really benefit Carolina. In fact, I'd go as far to say they've been shafted by it. I think Boston's a little bit better in every single phase, but it's still a different series than it was a year ago. Carolina, they bounced back. They won Game 2. It could be a good long series. I still give Boston the nod, and I say that as somebody who acknowledges I'm a Carolina Hurricanes fan. I'm a little biased when it comes to them, and I'm willing to point that out. Let's go to Justin and Clemens, who wants in on the Canes and the referees. Justin, what do you got for me?
Honestly, I just, not just the schedule, you know, kind of messing with the Hurricanes, but just blatantly bad calls and no calls. I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but it just seems like the refs are, they've decided who won already.
I don't know about that. I'm just saying that Boston Sports Radio, if you were to listen to that today, they're centering in on the referees. They're always the most popular scapegoat. And what I would also point out to you is this, Justin. A year ago, Game 1 and 2, Carolina, they were complaining. They were worried about the referees a bit too much, and Boston was worried about winning. And Carolina, I thought a key point last night, third period, 16 minutes left. You have the goal taken off the board. It's goaltender interference. That would have been an easy spot for Carolina to fold, already down 1-0 in the series. But they didn't. They got a PK kill. Rod Brindamore was asked about it after the game. He didn't go off the reporters. He said, it's probably best I don't comment on that. Carolina, they took care of business and realized, hey, the officiating's not specifically hurting us. It just hasn't been good for both sides. I think Boston's been hurt by it too. What do you think?
Fair. I got upset about that goal being taken off last night because it seemed like he was pushed into the goalie and tried to get out and everything else.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the call. We'll see what happens tomorrow at noon. That's Justin and Clemens. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Right after that PK, you have the goal scored by Dougie right over the glove hand of Tuukka Rask. I don't think that's a coincidence. Robert, we got Ed Harden who's going to join us, one of our favorite guests, in about 10 minutes. He's going to join us from Sedgefield Country Club. The Wyndham Championship Round 2 is underway. And the scoreboard looks a bit inverted. The guys who shot well yesterday are not the guys shooting very well today. We got weekly positivity, which we're going to do in a minute, but let's get to Steven Randleman before we do so. We'll take one more call on the Canes. Steve, what do you have?
Well, I don't know if you've watched a lot of the games other than the Hurricanes, and I am a diehard Hurricane fan, but just the officiating in Toronto in general has just been bad.
Brutal across the board. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, I've watched several of the games that are going in Edmonton. It seems to be different. I don't know if it's crews are going back and forth, but the Edmonton games don't seem to have the issues that they're having in Toronto. And you know, it's not just the Hurricane games. It's all of them that's been bad.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out, maybe after Rod Brind'Amour gets done lambasting the NHL refs, he can deal with the ACC after that, ACC basketball. Thanks for the call, Steve. Have a great weekend. There you go. Canes, Bruins, we're fired up about it. Noon tomorrow, see if the Canes could take a 2-1 series lead. But I still like the Bruins because I think they're just a little bit better of a team. I like how that roster looks a bit. Are you somebody that gets annoyed by officiating talk being a popular scapegoat? Hey, the Canes lost. Let's go ahead and bang on the referees.
Nah, not if it's warranted. I get it. I understand. It's easy to throw them under the bus, especially if mistakes are made. Like it, in the Rams-Saints game, of course they threw the refs under the bus because it's their fault. But usually that's not what I lean to. Usually I'm kind of more calm and reserved about stuff. Like, you have a friend who blames the refs on the Ravens winning the Super Bowl when they played the 49ers. And he says, oh, they were out for him the whole game. And
I watched a Super Bowl with the 49ers fan who said the same exact thing when they lost to the Chiefs. And I kept telling him, it's not the referees. It's the most – NC State fans, I'm looking at you. It's not the referees' fault.
We suck.
I feel like Goodwill Hunting. It's not your fault. It's just not your fault. All right, it's round 2 of the Wyndham Championship. We'll talk to Ed Harden in a second on it. But since we're about to shift gears to the Wyndham, I figured we could take this call on Harold Varner III. Mike and Elkin, are you rooting for Harold, or are you interested in what he's doing thus far?
Yes, I've got it on.
What do you think?
It's on. I think he's got a chance. I was telling the screener that I believe that he's playing the front nine last today, and he played the back nine first.
That's exactly right. I got that wrong earlier. He is playing the front nine or the back nine first.
But I'm hoping he can make several birdies here on whichever nine he's playing last day.
I think right now he's on one. Thank you for the phone call. Or he's on two right now. He's 7 under par. And on the day, he's even. I thought with the rain coming through in the morning and things looking beautiful now, I thought it was going to play incredibly soft and he'd have an awesome opportunity to surpass Tom Hoagie, Siwoo Kim, and Taylor Gooch at the top of the leaderboard, but that just hasn't happened so far today. It's a little disappointing. All right, I want things to get optimistic in here, Robert. I'm tired of feeling down about referees and feeling down about Harold Varner's performance in this second round. Let's talk about some of the good things that are happening. Call in and tell me something good that's happening to you in weekly positivity. 336-777-1600. Hey, Robert.
What's up, Josh?
I watched a really good movie this week.
Oh, yeah? Was it Almost Famous? Are you going to tell us about that again, or what you got?
I watched Almost Famous, which is really good. And there's a really good podcast, the Origins podcast, that's really good.
I don't think I like any movie good enough to watch or listen to an Origins podcast.
Oh, but it's so good.
How long is it?
I think it's 5 episodes, probably about
an hour each.
45, 50 minutes?
Yeah, I'm good on all that. 5 hours? Come on, dude. I could read all that. I could read it faster. Give me the transcript. Anyway, your movie. You watched a good movie.
Yes. I watched a really good movie, Robert. Watched actually a number of really good movies. I was pleasantly surprised how good Eurovision was.
I told
Will
you.
Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams.
It's not that bad. Anytime I bring you goofy sounding movies, you're like, ah, not that. There's no way it's good.
These Netflix comedies are getting better and better. The one with David Spade.
The Wrong Missy.
The Wrong Missy.
And I told you about that one, and you were
incredibly
like, oh,
funny.
No way it's good.
That's right. Eurovision. Maybe it's because I still have a thing for Rachel McAdams.
It's still not over. It's never been over.
What was the funniest moment of that movie for you?
I don't want to spoil it for the audience that hasn't seen it.
Well, it's been out for like 3 months, so they can get over it. My
favorite
part...
Maybe a month and a half.
I mean, either way, I'm really not worried about ruining a Netflix-exclusive comedy for someone. My favorite part was after they lost the competition at first, everybody's out on the boat, and then it just explodes. They're like, oh, my dream is crushed.
Kelly Clarkson explodes.
And then it just blows up.
Kelly Clarkson!
Robert.
They're like, oh, it's so tragic, but we won! We won! Robert, I love it. Great movie.
Real quickly, what's the thing good that's happened with you?
My Bigfoot statue came in.
Really?
It is fantastic. I love it. I hide it all over the house and scare my girlfriend.
For those who don't know, Robert Balt, a 5-foot-tall metallic Bigfoot statue.
It is so flipping heavy. This thing, I move it all the way around the house, and now she knows when I'm coming up the stairs with it to position it somewhere, because it's way heavier. You can hear, like, the creaks. So she'll be like, don't bring that thing up here! And then I hit it in the shower the other morning, and then she just opened it, slings the shower door open, and there's just this Bigfoot statue. Oh, I love it. It's the best purchase I've ever made.
Just how weird has this week been at Sedgefield Country Club? We're going to discuss that with the award-winning columnist of the Greensboro News and Record, Ed Hardin, next on The Drive.
Real talky, but not real listening.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
And the first time of the history of the Five Things at Five, we ran way too long to the point where I thought we covered all five topics, but then I realized in the commercial break, we did not get to number one. So let's change that now before you hear from Dave Clawson. Robert, do you have that very deep voice who can tell me that it's number one on the Five Things at Five?
Number one.
Brought to you by our friends at Beamer Tire and Auto Repair. I dug up this story just for you. The King of Bahrain has a robot bodyguard.
It is the most terrifying thing I've ever seen. That is my worst fears
Robert
come to life.
Robert hates robots. He thinks robots are going to take us over. We're trying to do so much technologically. We're not seeing that these robots have no empathy, and if they are strong enough, they might have a mind of their own. I don't quite know how that's going to happen, but Robert thinks there might be a robot overthrow in our lifetimes. But telling you more about this robot, it's fitted with 360 cameras.
Nope.
And built-in pistols.
No. If you saw this dude walking in with this look like it's a robot, what's the robot or the punch 'em up game?
Mike Tyson's Punch Out?
No, with the where you try to punch them and their heads go like dunk.
Oh, you're talking about Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
Rock'em Sock'em. If this Rock'em Sock'em Robot
This is a big robot. Like
walks,
this, it looks like Rob Gronkowski.
It's burly. It is large-shouldered, tree trunk legs. No. How did this ever get passed? This has got to be against, like, world policy or something to have. Didn't we talk about this? Where
apparently
people...
not the King of Bahrain. I mean, he just arrived in Dubai with his robot bodyguard.
If you're that worried,
if you are that worried that somebody's going to attack you, just don't leave. Just stay home. Like, why do you need a robot bodyguard?
Can the robot protect you from... I looked at the King of Bahrain. He's not wearing a mask. Can it protect you from coronavirus?
I doubt that.
What great irony would that be? You have this big robot with 360 cameras and fitted with built-in pistols, and corona gets you.
Well, then I think that robot becomes the new King of Bahrain or whatever.
Bahrain.
Then we have to deal with a robot king, and who knows what he's going
to
do.
We talked to Dave Clawson during his press conference on a number of subjects. Dabo Sweeney earlier in the week, he mentioned, hey, you can be a student online, but you can't be an athlete online. I wanted to pitch that at Dave Clawson, see what he thought about that. In addition to that, Sam Hartman, he was on the show earlier this week. His takeaway from President Nathan Hatch speaking to the football team was that he was going to fight for them in the meetings since he had a vote to decide whether or not the ACC goes ahead and plays football this year. I brought that up to him as well, and some other health concerns too. This is how those exchanges sounded.
Coach, thank you so much for spending the time. It's just good to see you. First off, Dabo said earlier in the week that you can be a student and do everything virtually, but you can't be an athlete virtually. Would you be in favor, in order to keep things safe, keep your guys safe, having guys do their classes virtually so they could be kind of isolated with each other?
I'm not going to mandate for our players. I think Wake Forest has been very proactive in making the classroom environment social distance, wear a mask, 6 feet apart. It's no different than our meetings. So we've taken every one of our meeting rooms and we had people come in. And if this meeting room can fit 58 people, in order to social distance, maybe it only can seat 18 or 19. And we designate what 19 seats they can sit in. And Wake Forest is doing the same thing, I believe, with their classrooms. So I told our players, you know, we don't tell you what to major in. We don't tell you what classes to take. And I'm not going to tell them whether they have to be online or in person. If you're concerned about being in a classroom and you would prefer to take most of your classes online, that's your choice. If you learn better face-to-face, I have great confidence in what the university and the administration are doing is to make the classroom environment as safe as possible. But it all comes down to personal responsibility and individual behaviors and the willingness to keep your mask on and keep 6 feet away. And it's our understanding if they do that, the risk level is minimal. That's where we are at an advantage, being the smallest Power 5 school in the country. That our classrooms to begin with are much smaller than probably anybody else that we play. And so instead of the class having 60 people in it, if it has 20 people in it, we're much better equipped to do that than most places.
I've talked to a number of athletic trainers who said it must be a nightmare when you see that the CDC symptoms for, say, heat illness is a lot of the same symptoms you're looking for potential COVID cases. When you talk about muscle cramps, you're talking about nausea, you're talking about vomiting. How have you guys been dealing with that in the early part of camp?
Well, we go with the two groups. We've shortened practice. I've built in more breaks and more water breaks than ever before. We have had, I think, one issue of that through 7 days of camp. So we have been, again, I viewed this first week as a bonus week. So this first week was to get more of an idea of where we are. We haven't conditioned. We're not doing conditioning at the end of practice. We're checking hydration levels and body weights daily. And because of not having the players here, not only are we dealing with the concern of COVID, but we are being extra vigilant of monitoring our players' conditioning levels. And by going every other day, we're allowing for a much longer recovery. So our one group went Monday and Tuesday, and our other group went today and tomorrow. Other than that, that's the only time so far our players have done back-to-back practices. And when you can practice and give them a full day for recovery and then practice the next day, the odds of that, those type of things happening go way down. And so we have just been, I think as cautious as we can possibly be to make sure that we're protecting against those other type of injuries or illnesses that can happen as a result of the players not having the same conditioning level they would normally have. In a typical year, we would be in a much different place and would have a better idea where they're at because they've been with us longer.
Coach, obviously the conference looks a lot different than what it normally would with Notre Dame in the league, but also no divisions. Would you be in favor of not having divisions in the ACC?
Oh, I'll be honest with you, Josh. Like, to me, this year is just a successful season. This year will be playing football. And I think there's a lot of different things that you've had to change and adjust because of COVID and the pandemic. And this season and this schedule is just one of them. And, who knows what people think when this is done? Who knows what happens in college athletics? I think the whole thing right now is it's just a storm brewing. And I think there'll be permanent changes to college athletics because of this time period of all these different things going on with the pandemic, social injustice, players finding their voice, name, image, likeness about to come on board, potentially a one-time transfer. The dynamics of this thing are changing so quickly that who the schedule is and whether there's one division or two, that is like of my list of priorities somewhere in the 20s or 30s.
And I wanted to ask you about President Hatch on Monday speaking with the team. Sam told me that it was very encouraging for him to hear the president say that he was going to fight for them. What was your
take? I would say this, that Dr. Hatch, first of all, for the president to be willing to get in front of the football team at a time like this where emotions are high in charge, I think shows courage on Dr. Hatch's part. We're fortunate to have a president that was willing to do that. And I think there's some people out there that after he did that probably wish that they could get their president to do that. And I reached out to Dr. Hatch and asked if he would do that. And I just said, listen, I think this will be beneficial either way. You're the one that has the vote. I think it's important that you listen to the players. And if it goes well, you'll get their perspective. And if it doesn't go well, nobody can say that they didn't have a chance to voice their opinion. And I think it took a lot of courage of Dr. Hatch to do that. I appreciate that he was willing to listen, but what he said is he appreciated what they did. I really do believe our football team set the standard for the entire student body on how to do this correctly and successfully if we want to play football and have school and a campus community at Wake Forest this year. But he always qualified it of, I will support it as long as I believe it's safe for you to play. At what point I believe it's not safe, I can't support you playing. So that qualifier was always part of the discussion. Now that doesn't show up on the highlight film or the video, but he didn't commit to voting to play. He committed to supporting us trying to play as long as it was safe and healthy and they weren't putting the student athletes' health at risk. So there was a lot of qualifiers in that support, which there should be.
Thanks, Coach.
Yep.
That was Dave Clawson earlier today during his press conference. And after I got done asking him a question, David Hale, he jumped in and just took a ferocious shot at me. David Hale was with us earlier in the week from ESPN, one of the best college football reporters out there. Just listen to how incredibly rude this was.
Dave, good to see you. First question, do you have a favorite office background or living room background of your reporters here? Is anybody really bringing it?
I don't understand what you're talking about, David.
I just was wondering if now that we're on Zoom, you can see into everybody's offices if you really respect. What I'm saying is that Josh Graham's office situation looks terrible.
Whoa! I mean, a slap in the face to the Sports Hub. I can't believe he said that. We better book in that or bookmark that. The next time we have David Hale on, we're in a fist fight over the radio.
I mean, he's not wrong, though. You do have an office. You just kind of commandeered Sawyer's office, and now you just stay in there like a squatter.
Well, his office had air conditioning. Like,
you're out in the open.
I was out in the open. You're right. We're all air conditioned, I guess, here, but I had more control on the temperature in there. And also, I was never going to be interrupted by anybody really in there. You know, I'm somebody who just keeps to myself.
Who is interrupting you?
You know, we're connected to a law office. There's some folks who live here near the loft in Kernersville. You know, people just pop in. And,
oh, that's rough, man. You got to talk sports with strangers. Woof. So after this, are you just going to take this punch on the chin and just be like, yeah, my office sucks, or are you going to do something about it?
Well, I don't know what all I could do when really what you saw in the background are these hanging, like, sound protectors. It's not foam, it's these things that are hanging here to try and insulate sound.
Yeah, but in that studio, you're not even talking. Like, you really don't even need those insulators.
You're right, I don't need it.
So you could take in, like, maybe a bookcase, maybe where... Mm. I think you should just really get their goat. Just bite the soap, mm-hmm. Farva. And next time you have a Zoom meeting, you come here this weekend, you drop, like, a bookcase off, put some books in it, yeah. Maybe light some candles behind it, and just have the best-looking office you could possibly have.
David had, like, a really cool bookcase, and he had his degrees hanging there.
He's at home.
Got some framed photos. He did. He was at home. So I guess it just wasn't a fair comparison. Anyway, we'll go back out to Sedgefield Country Club. We have an update to bring you. Pretty significant news for Saturday and Sunday with how things should play out. We'll go out to Sedgefield next on The Drive.
Providing you with a kind of sports programming that makes some people laugh. But most people just wince.
Ooh.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
The story, round one at Sedgefield, usually what we see in round one, you got low scores, and then at some point, either round two or round three, they come back to earth. And that seems to be happening in round two so far, as Tom Hoge went into the day as the leader with Harold Varner III, with Roger Sloan. He shoots two under par after a first round 62. Roger Sloan, a part of that first group that teed off at 7 a.m. today, even par for today. Harold Varner III right now is at even par, sitting on 7 right now. He bogeyed number 2, so he's having some difficulty too as the rain has subsided and we see the sun shining through our radio studio here, so things seem to be opening up in Greensboro. We now welcome in Taylor Zarzor, Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio, a North Carolina sports radio legend as well. It's good to have you on with us, Taylor. How's it going?
I'm doing great. Glad to be back on in the Triad. These were some fun years during this time slot. Glad that you're holding down the fort.
What score, Taylor, do you think might win at Sedgefield this weekend? Because usually it's 20 to 22 under.
Yeah, I'd say it's going to be somewhere around that. And, you know, Josh, I think what you just said is true, that usually, you know, after a low round, you come back down to earth. And I think that's the case almost every week on the PGA Tour. But the thing is just not the same players are shooting really low scores today that as opposed to who shot them yesterday. I mean, Shane Lowry shot 63 today. Jason Kokrak is 7 under through 13 holes. And so there's still low scores out there. It's just really hard for the same people to shoot those low scores each day. I do think that by the time this is over with, you'll probably see about the same score that typically wins this event. The golf course is in insanely good shape. I played it a couple weeks ago, and it's as good as it's ever been. And I've played it the Monday and the Wednesday of tournament week, and there was no difference. I think the greens, if anything, might be a little quicker than they typically are, and that could be an issue this weekend. But I'm not objective when it comes to North Carolina, when it comes to Greensboro, but I don't think that this golf course gets enough respect nationally. I think it's one of the very best on the PGA Tour.
Well, what makes it unique, it's a Donald Ross golf course, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the only regular PGA Tour Donald Ross golf course out there. And you mentioned it's in good shape. That's something that Mark Brazel noted with us yesterday, the tournament director. Give me a sense, though, what makes this course stand out to you, aside from the fact it's a Don Ross?
Well, there is one other one now in Detroit that just was added to the schedule in the last couple of years, but that piece of property is so flat. So while, yes, Donald Ross designed it, you just, when you were, if you were on it, you wouldn't think that it has all of the intricacies of a Donald Ross course. I think that the condition that John McConnell and his staff keep it in, having such thick rough, putting such a premium on ball striking from tee to green, and around the green, there are so many places you can get your ball in trouble if you don't hit it on the green. There's just such a huge disparity between a great shot and a bad shot. And they're not very, you know, in terms of yardage, there's really within 1 or 2 yards, you can make a birdie or an eagle or a bogey or a double. So I think that just the premium on shot making, and then just the commitment that John McConnell has made throughout the Carolinas to having outstanding golf courses. There's the Robert Trent Jones Trail down in Alabama, where I'm originally from, that's really nice. And they have this network of courses throughout that region. There are a few other places in the country that have these types of networks, but I don't think there's anything like what John McConnell has put together, where you have a Corn Ferry event in the Triangle at TPC Wakefield Plantation, which John also runs. And then you have this golf course, which is one of two courses, of course, in Greensboro that he runs. And you have them throughout the Carolinas. And he's just obsessed with having great golf courses that are in great condition with an incredible staff. So to me, that's a huge factor in why the tournament does so well.
It's Taylor Zarzor with us here, SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio. I mentioned Harold Varner because I think if I had to pick the perfect storyline that would fall in line with what this tournament has been for the last 10 to 15 years, it would be Harold winning, considering he's from Gastonia, went to East Carolina, and also he hasn't won a PGA Tour event. 11 top 10s, and when you look at the history of the Wyndham, the recent history, that is, because, of course, you could go way back to the Sam Snead days and such, he is somebody that, or I think this tournament, you have 7 of the last 13 winners being first-time PGA Tour event winners at the Wyndham, which is a really neat thing. Is that the interest, the storyline you're most interested in following this weekend? If not, what is?
No, I think that would be such a huge story for the Wyndham Championship and for the PGA Tour. And we all know why it would get a lot of attention, certainly given some of the horrible things this country is dealing with right now. But I think that what would make me happiest about that storyline is knowing the kind of human being Harold is. And if more and more people are going to get to know Harold because of what he looks like and because of his background, then so be it. He is the kindest, funniest, most colorful guy to be around. He just warms up every room he's in, and he is one of the most popular people on the PGA Tour with his peers. He really is. He has a contagious personality. And I think that if he wins this golf tournament, again, I get why so many would be interested in this type of story, and that's fine. We desperately need to have more people of color and more backgrounds on the PGA Tour and playing the game of golf and connecting to it. And the fact that we just came from a municipal golf course and played a major championship, I think, is a wonderful step in the right direction. But this would be another. And it would be another also because of the kind of personality Harold has. And so I think that's what would make me most excited, is just to have someone like him winning golf tournaments and representing the game of golf, I think would be a great thing.
Taylor Zarzor, very well said there. Before I let you go, you mentioned the fact that I'm holding it down in this time slot. I mentioned you're a North Carolina sports radio legend. Any good stories you care to share about time you've spent in the Triad?
I think that it's just the best example of the spirit of North Carolina. You know, I know that there's a lot of jokes made about Charlotte and about Raleigh, and Charlotte's like this, you know, national town or sees itself as that. And certainly there is more of a national and even international feel with banking and just all of the different work that goes on in this community. Greensboro very much feels like North Carolina as much as any town does. And I really appreciate that. I think that how hospitable of a place it is really is something that resonates with me given where I'm from in Mobile, Alabama. So it reminds me a lot of home. And I don't know that I've ever had a bad experience. I would say if you're asking like, you know, for best experiences ever, to me, if I were to watch one sporting event in one venue in this state, it's not even close. It's Greensboro Coliseum. If I were to watch one concert, first of all, it would be Eric Church in Greensboro Coliseum. It is, to me, it's just, it has the best venue in the state because of the noise that is in that Coliseum. And we have had so many amazing ACC tournaments and NCAA first and second round events there and concerts there. And I just, that's what I think of, I guess. Outside of the hospitality is just how awesome of an atmosphere the Greensboro Coliseum is. And Josh, I just desperately need it to come back. I can't wait until we're all gathering again at events like those.
Yeah, from an entertainment perspective, strictly, the high point of my 2020 and the low point of my 2020 was in the Greensboro Coliseum. I brought in the new year with the Avett brothers performing at Greensboro Coliseum. And of course, the low point from a sports perspective has to be when I see John Swofford presenting an ACC championship trophy on a Thursday in an empty Coliseum to Florida State players who are just bummed out that they're not going to be playing that day. But to your point, let's hope that sometime soon we will be able to gather. I will be able to see you in person, and we will be able to go out to Sedgefield Country Club, hang out under a tiki hut at Margaritaville, and we'll be talking about good things moving forward. But it's good to hear your voice. I hope you're doing well, and I hope we can catch up and talk some football down the line.
I hope so too, Josh. Appreciate all that you do. You're doing a great job there, and obviously have a great connection with that community. And I think the people of the Triad certainly appreciate you, so I'm looking forward to that. I hope it's sooner rather than later.
Thanks so much, man. Good to hear from you.
Likewise.
That
thank
is-
you.
Taylor Zarzur, Sirius XM, PGA Tour Radio, and a guy who knows every single corner of this state, and someone I really respect. Before we get to a top 10 list, my top 10 golf names, which we've been taking submissions today on Twitter for, and I've gotten a lot of good ones that aren't on my top 10 list, but I'll share with you from the audience if you want to keep sending those in, at Sports of Triad. Matt Rhule. Had a chance to catch up with him right before we turned on the radio microphones, and I was just interested in getting an update on the 7 rookies that the Panthers drafted.
Matt, what has the adjustment period looked like for the rookies so far, and have any of them stood out to you?
I've been really pleased with the rookies. I think they've done a really nice job of, kind of grinding. We brought them in early. They grinded at their own pace. And they mix right in with the veterans. You know, I think obviously the first three guys that we drafted, Derek Brown, Gross Matos, and Chin, they've stepped right in and done a really nice job. But then look at the other guys that we brought in. They're all working at a really nice level. They look like guys that can help our team. And I think from the undrafted guys, Sam Tecklenburg, who played for me at Baylor, has done a really nice job. Omar Bayless and many more. So I think there's a lot of guys there that in this unique year with 16 guys on the practice squad. That are going to find roles for us on the active roster or on the practice squad as well. So I think our coaches are doing a nice job of coaching everyone. And the vets have done a great job of really kind of putting their arm around those guys' shoulders and saying, hey, this is how we do things.
I think the rookies, it's maybe the biggest story in Panthers training camp. The biggest question of the season is, okay, what's Teddy Bridgewater going to be? But when you draft 7 defensive players, you're going to need those guys to play immediately. When you lose Luke Kuechly, when you lose pretty much your entire D-line, you're going to need some of those guys to contribute. And Bill Belichick, he made no bones about it when he was talking about Cam Newton earlier today, talking about the state of his team. He said that he's not really pleased where the rookies are at right now because they've been ill-equipped. No OTAs, no preseason games. It's hard for them to be ready to play NFL football considering they've never done it before. The Panthers, unlike the Patriots, though, need a lot of those guys to play right now and to contribute. So I think that is a really big storyline to follow as we proceed through camp, and we are less than 1 month away from the Panthers opening up their season against the Las Vegas Raiders. All right, up next, in honor of the Wyndham Championship, I'll list off my top 10 golf names on a Friday drive.
As long as you keep talking, they can't end the show.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
It's time for my weekly top 10 list. Some of you love it. Some of you hate it. Robert Walsh is the one that falls into the category of the latter. But a lot of you have sent in submissions today in honor of the Wyndham Championship in Greensboro. We're doing my top 10 golf names. Names in sports that you can connote to golf. This was a really fun one to do, Robert. I have so many submissions. Really difficult to figure out what's going to make the top 10. Do you have ones? Do you have any that are percolating at the top of your head right now?
I had Draymond Green, Adam Driver, even though he's not an athlete.
Adam Driver. Big fan of Adam Driver. Getting a lot of Donald Driver. Is he the best Packers wide receiver of the last two decades? How would you rank in order Greg Jennings, Donald Driver, Davante Adams?
Probably the exact order you just said it.
Okay, so Donald Driver gets the edge there. No love for James Jones. All right, top 10 golf names. Let's get into it. I remember the first time this music was played for this segment. Someone who used to work here said, "What is this bougie music?" And it was that moment I knew this segment was going to take off and it was going to last 2 years on this radio show. Top 10 golf names. Number 10, my number 10 golf name, Chipper Jones.
You could trouble me for a warm glass of shut the hell up.
You said you grew up a Braves fan. Was he your favorite Brave?
Yeah, him or Andrew. One of the two.
Andrew Jones. What a guy. I think he qualifies as a Nickelback. I don't know for sure. He might be too good for that. But just for this purpose, I'll say he's a Nickelback. Did they end up releasing an album today?
That is so far down my list of priorities, I have no idea.
I'd love to figure out if they put out an album today. I know Drake dropped some music.
Just a song, a single.
Oh, it was just a single? Okay. Well, the music video. I wonder how much Nike pays Drake. Just interested. Where he's doing an entire music video in a Nike company store, and he also has a song called Jumpman. It's an interesting question. Number 9. Top 10 golf names. Danny Green.
You're playing golf and you're going to like it.
What about my asthma?
I'll give you asthma.
Kind of along the same lines as Draymond Green.
It still works. I like that one.
I love TNT trying to raise funds for Draymond Green's $50,000 fine. They felt like they were responsible, and apparently they could only get like $250 together.
I think he'll be okay. I think he can pay the fine.
That's right. Very good at television, Draymond Green. Number 8. My number 8 golf name. Obi Toppin.
Why didn't you just go home? That's your home! Are you too good for your home?
What do you view to be the greatest golf movie ever?
I prefer Caddyshack, but Happy Gilmore is a good consolation prize.
Yeah, I probably go Caddyshack in the comedy department. Happy Gilmore has to be in that discussion. I'm a fan of Happy Gilmore,
There's just too much star power in Caddyshack.
Like, oh, my goodness.
Look at that. Like, who's in that movie?
Who makes you laugh the most?
Probably Rodney Dangerfield. I just love his delivery. I love his whole aura about him. He's just
I forget the actress, though, but when she arrives on screen, goodness. Still holds up. Still gets the job done. Caddyshack, Happy Gilmore, Legend of Bagger Vance is really good. Tin Cup. That's probably where I had. I didn't like the Shia LaBeouf greatest game ever played or whatever that was. I think documenting the 1915 or 1917 U.S. Open way back when. But those are the ones that stick out to me. All right, where are we at? Number seven. My number seven golf name, T. Higgins.
The amazing stuff about this is that you can play 36 holes on it in the afternoon. Take it home and just get stoned in a bejesus belt.
T. Higgins. Had a number of people guess that today.
We had a lot of guesses. A ton of guesses on the
Twitter.
That's
right. And a lot of them already were written down to be on the list. So I feel like I'm stealing it from some of the listeners, which isn't the case. I had this list set in stone at about 10 o'clock this morning. Number five, or make it number six. My number six golf name, George Foreman.
You will not make this putt, you jackass.
It takes me a little bit with some of them. Foreman, though. Four. I got it. Or as Rodney says, I guess you should have said two.
You jackass. Number five. My number five golf name. Larry Birdie.
The price is wrong,
Do I need to explain that one to you?
Birdie? No.
Got it. Just making sure. Price is wrong, Bob. Replace the Bob. Number four, my number four golf name, Bogey Cousins.
Take drugs, Danny?
Every day.
Good. So what's the problem?
I don't know.
No, 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 no.
A stud.
No, 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 no.
There's so many people in that movie.
Number three, my number three golf name, Ian Eagle.
I'm just a man, same as you are.
You're not a man, you're a bishop, for God's sakes!
There is no God.
Number two! I'm a big fan of Ian Eagle, by the way.
I was going to ask if commentators count. I didn't know that he was a sports dude.
Yeah, sports figure, sports commentator division.
Sure, just
qualifies.
Make it fit your list.
I just said golf names and sports. Number two! My number two golf name. Ruffin McNeil.
I'm sorry, I got bursitis.
You got bursitis?
Yeah.
So that means you got to play with a horn.
It helps.
So you're going to tell me you didn't steal that off Twitter today?
100%. I actually got that from a text.
I will not believe you.
I got this from a text from a friend before I even put it out on Twitter. I tried to run this list by some people, and a friend of mine in Greenville hit me and said, Ruffin McNeil.
If it wasn't Mark Miller, I don't believe you.
It was Mark Miller.
I still don't believe you.
It's true, I can show you the text. Just dropping real names on the radio for no reason. Number one, shouts to Mark Miller. Number one, top 10 golf names, Iron Mike Tyson.
Dude, you've got to be kidding me.
Nope, that is number one, Justin Thomas. Top 10 golf names. Now let's get to the ones sent by the audience that I thought were really good, really clever names all throughout social media. I really enjoyed Kimbo Slice. Thought
bad.
That was really good.
Not bad, RIP.
Someone actually sent me in George the Slice Man Gervin. Eric Wedge, an excellent one. Got that a couple of times today. Tree Rollins, I don't know if that counts. Michael Ryder Cup, if you're a hockey fan, you know what's up there. So, those are my top 10 golf names.